Hello. You're listening to Beside Stillwater's Netcast, a tabernacle service of Stillwater's home churches and worship center.
Did you get that? Artistic belief. First of all, Walter Brueggemann is not an act you want to follow because I could watch that over and over again, and he is so economical with his words that I get something new from it every time I see it. He's a very smart man, very gifted theologian, and he sees and with his words cuts right through to what the truth is. And in just a little over 3 minutes there, he managed to reduce some things for us that if we weren't listening carefully, we could have glossed over. So it's not my job to be smarter than Walter Brueggemann or for him to be my warm-up act. I think what I would like to do is hear his words in light of what our lectionary is talking about. See, there is this idea of dead orthodoxy. And that's what we live by. Most of what we do in our existence is we try to get things to be normalized to a place where we understand things. What we do is we set up a system so that we don't have to think. We also set up systems so that we are able to navigate them because we are not God and we cannot hold everything in our head and be able to navigate life. It's much easier if we can set up a roadmap and to be able to stay on that course. And if that course remains the same, that we can navigate ourselves to our destination. In this case, to God or to the kingdom. Or to heaven. And what Walter Brueggemann is pointing out there is that we don't have that luxury in life. And what we do is we have things that come in and impact us. And we are impacted with the imperfect. And it's in those times that we discover who God is, because God is not interested in us creating systems. He's not interested in creating systems whereby we can navigate through life outside of Him. That is not operating in faith. If we get good at being able to navigate the world without getting dirty, without getting impacted in the wrong ways, without encountering darkness, without encountering light, we are not afforded that luxury. The world is a messy place and it is a fallen place. And what we discover in God is that those dead orthodoxies, when we get comfortable and good at them, we stop hearing them. We stop seeing. And we stop experiencing God, who is our life. He's created us. We are created beings, and everything that we see in life is created by Him. And because we are part of His creation, we have to at least acknowledge that God is creativity. He is the ultimate creator. And when in art needs the flaws for it to actually be good art. You know, just to use an example, I've just come to country music, that I now enjoy it, much to the chagrin of my wife. But I thoroughly enjoy country music, like I'm hearing it with brand new ears. And I'm not somebody who enjoys the slick stuff. I like the gritty. I like the rootsy kind of stuff. I like when the guy's voice breaks. Johnny Cash did some great work through his, I mean, what a body of work. But his best album for me is his last. That was the album where he couldn't quite reach some of the notes, where his vibrato and his voice wasn't quite there. But he was saying really profound things, and the words matched the music. And there was an artistry there that when you listen to it, you were drawn in to what he was saying. And the music accompanied what he was saying and gave a flavor and a nuance to the words that he was using that I can't even describe. And it was what I would have to say is the closest thing to a perfect album for me. And it had everything to do with an exposure and an honesty to the things that were already there. And we could have had an album that was released where some producer got a hold of it and was really slick and digitally enhanced his voice and pulled all those notes to up to where they should have been and kind of smoothed out the rough spots and brought in some band that was just really, really dynamite and slick and had a drum machine. And you know what? I would have a horrible experience listening to that kind of album because it wasn't true. It missed being exposed. And what God gives us, he allows us to endure pain. He allows us to be impacted by things of the world. He allows things to come against us. And what we do is those are the things that really become the things that form us. But our orthodoxies scream against that, because they're discomforting, disquieting. And Walter Brueggemann was talking about Job and how Job, you know, you had the slick guys. You had the guys that had their working of religion nailed. They spoke very true things, and they had a whole lot of things to say that were factual. They were sort of the ones that were behind the mixing board and were kind of ruining Johnny Cash's album, if to use that analogy, by imposing an orthodoxy to the way that you make an album. And Job comes along like a Johnny Cash and says, leave that be. And what he does is he allows the trouble in his life to be the thing that we look to even to this generation. The weight and the palpability of what he endured and the flaws that were in there and the struggle that was in there are the things that we benefit from today. They are the things that make his story true. But we need our orthodoxies. We need our theology just tied up in a nice little bow that we don't have to think anymore. So Brueggemann is talking about when you embrace that kind of artistry, it's artistry with music. And did you ever take notice that most commercial music, the music that appeals to the masses, is some pretty crappy music. I think each one of us would know that. And there are people that are out there who don't dance to the same drummer. They don't. There was nothing commercial about them. And I think back to the 70s, and you had different bands, and they all sounded different. The point wasn't to sound the same. And when you click the radio on today, everything sounds the same. It's the same groove. It's the same this. It's the same that. You can barely distinguish voices. And that rears up in me because it's dishonest. It's studio trickery. And what you never get to is you never get to the pain. He said that a true artist has a wounded constituency. How many times have you listened to a song that was poignant to you because you knew just what they were talking about? I've been through that. I know what it's like to endure just that. And the pain is exposed and almost raw, and so you can identify with it. That's what he's talking about. And here in our lectionary this week is from Luke chapter 24. Why do doubts arise in your hearts? Look at my hands and my feet. See that it is I myself. See? Touch me and see. For a ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you see that I have. Then he said to them, these are my words that I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms must be fulfilled. And what he's addressing here is the fact that they didn't believe him. He's trying to tell them that the only way to dismantle your orthodoxy, the only way to dismantle your theology of perfection, is for me to be the last sacrifice so that there can be no other. It's, I need to dismantle your temple systems because you've grown accustomed to them. You've gotten good at them, and you think that they are an end in themselves. And so what he's saying here is he's saying, I must die. And they thought that he was somehow talking in a parable. Somehow, maybe, that he was talking about he would lose popularity among the people. And he was talking about literally laying down his life. And they didn't understand it, to the point that they ran when things got bad. They didn't see it. They didn't believe it. And so when their perfect little world didn't turn out the way that their orthodoxies dictate, the way that their theologies, their static words on the page, it didn't turn out, they cut and run. And what's amazing here is that here we have the resurrected Christ. He is leading us into resurrection. And we've discussed this many times, that the foundations of the Christian faith is not the cross. That is not the gospel. The good news of the kingdom is not the cross. It is the resurrection. That's what the early church is founded on. The resurrected Christ. The one who didn't, the one whom the tomb couldn't hold. And if there's a message in there, it means that we go through our struggle with a promise at the other end. Somewhere there will be new life. There will be a resurrection. There will be this time of handling Him. There will be this time of eating with Him. There will be this time of celebration. But in the meantime, we endure and we lay ourselves low for the sake of everyone else in the community. What's interesting is he talks about, why do doubts arise in your hearts? He's standing with them. And he says, touch me. Look at my hands. Touch them. Handle me. And then he says, to prove that your superstitions aren't correct, let me sit and eat with you. Let me finish what we started here in the upper room. Let's continue the Feast of Weeks. Give me food. Let me sit with you. And I cannot believe that I have never read this before, or that it never sunk in before. While in their joy, they were disbelieving and still wondering. Are you kidding me? The risen Christ has come into the room. He has suffered terribly, and they understand the anguish and the fear of the movement dying, and he was put to death in the most hideous manner on a Roman cross. And 3 days later, he rises again, and he's with them in a room now. And they're handling him. They're touching him. They're putting their fingers into the holes in his hands. And he's saying, you still don't get it. Feed me. And he sits and eats with them. And they are still joyful, but they don't believe. He says, these are my words that I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law, the prophets, and the Psalms must be fulfilled. Now, the reason that I was playing the film from Walter Brueggemann is because those books, the prophets, the Psalms, and even the law, what do they all have in common? They were all creative books to help us navigate. They were not necessarily systems. Laws were given, as we talked about during Lent, in the desert to keep you safe in the desert. Laws were given to be creative, to steer you away from wanting to remain in Egyptian fantasy. Laws were given that didn't even seem like it was orthodox, even for the desert, because once he tells them, don't celebrate with a calf because it's too Egyptian, and then he creates an Egyptian symbol to lead them out of safety of the serpents. You see, there's creativeness there, but what there isn't there is just a dead orthodoxy. It's things that, as they have need, God is creative in showing them how to move forward. And what they've gotten good at with the law is the decision that they are God's preferred people, and that their systems are static, and that their systems are the only way to God. And the prophets and the Psalms come along and argue that in humanity. They come along and struggle. And they say, yeah, God, I know who you are, I know who you want me to be, but I am just mad as hell. How can we sing in a strange land? Why have you let us go into Babylonian exile? We're dying here. And they scream at God. And God comforts them. See, the artistry there is that God meets them as a wounded constituency. That's where he shows up. When they're not willing, they can't hide anymore. And the Psalms are full of that. And the prophets are busy telling Israel constantly that you are in dead orthodoxy. Your worship means nothing because you've lost your heart. You've lost your heart for people, and you've lost your heart for God, and you've walked away. Who do you think you're comfortable in your religion? And that's not who I am. And so the prophets and the Psalms and even the law are these created things to help people live in the midst of their torment. And they are the tools that we are, if we understand them and come along, if we will join Christ in this creativity of resurrection, if we'll join him in this work, if we lose ourselves the same way that he did, then we become resurrected. Now. And we become part of Christ. We become his body. You know what's not included in his little telling them that they he's saying, this is what I've been telling you. Everything that's written about me in the law and in the prophets and in the Psalms had to come to pass. That whole struggle had to happen. You don't get out of this without the struggle. But that's where I am. And he's saying, you just didn't understand. You wanted to cling to your dead orthodoxy. You wanted to cling to your systems. And you didn't understand that you have to join the wounded to really know where I'm at. And that's the only way to resurrection. Now he goes on to say, and then he opened their mind to understand the scriptures. You see, it's undeniable that he's standing there. And the way that the Pharisees and the religious elite would say that you find your way to God is by being really good at doing temple. By being really good at not being found in sin. To be really good at trying to navigate so that you don't really have to touch undesirables. To be God's preferred people. And then you're in with God. But he's saying, no. You believed them. But I needed to open your minds. I needed you to see me suffer this way. I needed you to see who I hung around with. I needed you to see that that is what the law is talking about. That that is what the prophets are talking about. That that is what the Psalms are talking about. And that's the way to being resurrected and being with God. Messiah is to suffer and rise from the dead on the third day. And that repentance and forgiveness of sins is to be proclaimed in his name to all nations, beginning from Jerusalem. And you are witness now to these things. See, what wasn't revealed. It says, everything written about me had to be fulfilled from Moses, the law, the prophets, and the Psalms. You know what's not there? The history books. The things that they imposed upon God. The things where God said, go and murder in my name. The things that God, that what they did is they chronicled their dysfunction. Those were not the things where Jesus is saying that they were fulfilled in me. And in Acts, what Tanya read about Peter's discourse here, and he's talking about, now, friends, I know that you acted in ignorance, as did your rulers. You see? And what he's doing is, Peter is begging them. It says, when Peter saw it, he addressed the people. He begins to talk about how the rulers didn't get it. They didn't see. See, not seeing and ignorance are synonymous here. Peter is asking them to see. He's asking them to be found sinless in Christ. Not perfect. Not without sins, plural. Because if a man says he's without sin, he's a liar and the truth isn't in him. But not being found in singular sin. Not being found in the religious elite. Not being found in the dead orthodoxy. Not being found contrary to who Christ is. Singular sin. And 1 John, see what love the Father has given us. That we should be called children of God, and that is what we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it didn't know Him. Beloved, we are children now. What we will be hasn't been revealed yet. You know, that's the sweet by and by part. Or even next week. What we do know is this. When He is revealed, we will be like Him. For we will see Him as He is. You see, when He is revealed, when He opens our mind to the Scriptures, when we're not stuck in our dead orthodoxy, when we are willing to look, when we have our minds opened, we get to see who He is. We get to see the resurrection. We get to see where we are. We get to see our own resurrection. And it says, seeing Him when He is revealed, when I'm not acting in ignorance like the Pharisees and the rulers, when He is revealed, when I'm able to touch Him and follow Him, when He is revealed in the humanity of the Psalms, in the majesty of the law and its creativity, when He is revealed in the prophets saying, no, you've forsaken the poor. When He is revealed that we're willing to see Him different, then we'll be like Him, because we'll see Him as He really is. Folks, we are children of God. We can try to keep moral codes and we're going to fail. But if we belong to Him, and what Walter Brueggemann was talking about is he was talking about the safety of the community. It's the place where you are safe to think outside of the box. It's the place where you are safe to ask impossible questions. It's the place where you are safe to disagree. It's the place that you are safe because you've all been resurrected. And now, because of the grace that we give each other, you can see Him and handle Him in His resurrection. And it begs the question of us, what will be the form of resurrection that's recognizable in our lives? What will be our wounds that we offer people to handle? What will be the bread that we share? What will be the freedom that's offered by us? What does our resurrection really look like? Because it has to be communal, open-minded, in order for it to be resurrected. You see, seeing is believing. And what I'm asking us is to see Him as He is. And believing means doing. Our life is God's art. And we can live by dead orthodoxies, or we can be this unbelievable mosaic that He's created out of us that just screams to the world just how merciful He is. We are His art.
You have been listening to Beside Still Waters Netcast. For more information about Still Waters and its ministries, please visit besidestillwaters.net.